Members, I will call the Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Kendall, would you please call the roll?
Chair Mello is excused. Vice Chair Beltran?
Here.
Ranking Member Tant?
Here.
Representative Amnesty?
Here.
Representative Bell? Representative Burfield?
Here.
Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Escamani?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Hawkins?
Here.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Lopez is excused. Representative Plasencia?
Here.
Representative Redmond?
Here.
Representative Schoaf?
Here.
Representative Temple?
Here. Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Members and guests, I'll ask you to please silence all cell phones. If there are any members of the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the subcommittee, please fill out an appearance card. We do have some appearance cards up here already, and those appearances will be recognized at the end of the three presentations that we have today. Members, we do have three presentations today related to nursing education. First, we're going to have Dr. Raina Letourneau, who is the Executive Director of the Florida Center for Nursing. Dr. Letourneau will provide us with a high-level overview of the center's recently published nursing education report, which, among other things, provides information about Florida's nursing education programs, enrollment, and capacity. Next, we're going to hear from Dean Usa Menon of the USF College of Nursing, who will give us a presentation on USF's VCARE program, which is a veteran to BSN pathway. To provide the Florida College System perspective, we also have Dr. James Henningsen, President of the College of Central Florida, and Dr. Stephanie Cortez, Dean of Health Sciences at the College of Central Florida. Dr. Cortez will provide us a presentation on the wonderful things happening in the world of nursing at the College of Central Florida, including their paramedic and ASN bridge program. We will begin with Dean Menon, who will introduce Dr. Raina Letourneau.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to come and tell you about something that we love doing and being in the profession of nursing. Dr. Raina Letourneau, newly promoted to associate professor in the College of Nursing at the University of South Florida, is also the newly appointed executive director for the Florida Center for Nursing.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much. I would like to start by expressing gratitude to be able to be here today to present to you. I honestly want to brag a bit about the good work that's coming out of the Florida Center and express gratitude to all of you, because without your support, none of this work would have been happening. And so I do have some slides that I've prepared. So again, as Dr. Menon mentioned, my name is Raina Letourneau. I've been a nurse for more than 20 years, and I've been recently appointed as the executive director of the Florida Center for Nursing. It's my honor to do this work, and we are proudly headquartered at the University of South Florida's College of Nursing. Just a bit of the background information. The Florida Center for Nursing has been established in State Statute 464.0195. We have, per statutory requirements, two major goals. So our primary goals are identified here on this slide. We are to develop a statewide strategic plan for the nursing workforce in our state, making sure that that statewide strategic plan has innovative solutions to some of the problems that our data is recognizing. And we also are going to enhance and promote recognition, reward, and renewal activities for the nurses in the state. I'm here today to be able to present to you some information about the most recent Florida Center for Nursing's education report. Consistent with 464.0195, the Florida Center for Nursing conducts an annual assessment of the nursing education programs throughout the state of Florida. in the statute, it's referred to as the implementation study. We evaluate the data from all of the approved and accredited programs throughout our state. We ask the programs to be able to report to us information from their most completed academic year. So the definition of the academic year varies a little bit between different programs, depending on when their admission and enrollment cycle begins. But for the most part, an academic year starts in a fall term, and that could be either August or September, and it ends in a summer term, which is either July or August. The methodology that we use is a scientific methodology. We use online survey to send to all of the 489 pre-licensure nursing education programs that were identified at the time of the survey. Our nursing education programs are identified from the Department of Health's MQA database. That database is refreshed nightly, so it gives us the most up-to-date information about the approved programs. Pre-licensure nursing education programs, as I'm going to continue to refer to throughout this presentation, are programs which prepare our students to be able to earn licensure as either a registered nurse, an RN, or a practical nurse, or a licensed practical nurse, PN. And so when I talk to you about those pre-licensure programs and I present to you some data, I'm going to present to you data on PN and RN programs. And then I even take a deeper dive into the RN programs because we can categorize the RN programs depending on the degree that the candidate earns for associate degree programs and the Bachelor of Science in Nursing programs. So key findings. Of the 489 nursing programs that received our survey, we had a response rate of 61.6%. It broke down to 119 of the practical nurse programs responded to our survey, and 182 of the registered nurse programs responded to our survey. We had the highest response rates from the public school types when we break out public versus private, and we also had the highest response rate in the Northwest region of our state. Thank you for that. Our survey consists of, we collect much data from these programs, including faculty data, student data. We look at the capacity of the programs, enrollment rates, graduation rates. I want to focus on two key things with you today in our time. And the first one is faculty. Our data and the programs are reporting to us that they do not have enough full-time faculty to be able to handle the increased capacity of the pre-licensure programs. And on this slide, you can see that there are almost 400 full-time vacant faculty positions. We also have identified that there are barriers to filling those vacancies throughout our state. And so when we looked at what are those barriers to filling the faculty vacancies, what are the barriers to faculty recruitment? This slide shows you some of the variables, and clearly all of the programs, the associate, baccalaureate, and practical nurse programs, are identifying that there's a limited qualified applicant pool, which is their largest barrier. Another significant barrier is that the salary is not competitive. When we talk about salary being competitive and the limited qualified applicant pool, some of the things that are important are the minimum qualifications for faculty members. So when we are looking at our professional nursing programs, the minimum qualifications for programs are that at least 50% of the program's faculty members and the director of the program hold a master's or higher in nursing, or a bachelor's degree in nursing, and a master's or higher in a field related to nursing. So we do need high levels of education to be able to serve in the faculty role. With our practical nursing education programs, the program director and at least 50% of the program faculty must be RNs who have a bachelor's degree or higher in nursing. And that explains why in the limited applicant pool column, we see that it's not as difficult for LPN programs to be able to fill those faculty vacancies as compared to the ADN and the BSN programs. When we take a further analysis of the barriers, using the same variables, but looking at it from a different way, categorizing our nursing programs as either public or private institutions, and then even separating out our private institutions into the not-for-profit or the for-profit categories, we see that the public schools are reporting that they have a very large barrier related to salary not being competitive in order to fill those faculty vacancies. The next thing that I would like to present to you today is looking at our NCLEX pass rates. So when we look at our NCLEX annual data, this is not self-reported data. So the faculty data I reported to you was were the responses from the surveys that we sent to the programs. The NCLEX annual data is coming to us from the National Council of State Boards of Nursing via the department, the Florida Board of Nursing. So a little about the NCLEX. The NCLEX examination is a dedicated, psychometrically sound, and legally defensible nurse licensure and certification examination, and it's consistent with current entry-level practice. What I'm going to present to you are 3 years' worth of data from 2020, 2021, and 2022, and recognizing that this NCLEX data represents a calendar year from January to December, so it does not align with an academic year. When we look at our Florida pass rates, and when we talk about pass rates, we're talking about the first attempt of taking the test, so a pass rate on that first attempt. In Florida, we are below the national rates and have been for the last 3 years in 2020, 2021, and 2022. You can see that over the past years, Florida as a state has decreased over the past 3 years, but that is consistent with the national levels for the NCLEX RN. So we are mirroring national trends. Looking further at the NCLEX RN pass rates, we can separate the baccalaureate BSN programs and the ADN, the associate degree nursing programs, and you can see here that our trends are also mirroring what's happening nationally, but we are below the national average. Looking at the NCLEX PN pass rates over the last year, again, consistent with the RN, we are below the national average. Then the Florida Center wanted to look a little bit deeper because maybe things aren't all created equal, and let's look at what are the diverse things happening throughout our state. And the first thing that we wanted to look at are what are the regional differences. So on this slide here, the bars that you're looking at represent our RN pass rates, our PN pass rates, and the overall pass rate for a region. And here you can see that there are regions that are performing at or with or in close proximity to the national benchmarks. And there are also regions here that are not. The lines on this graph are identifying the number of programs in each region. So the regions that have the lower amount of programs seem to be performing at a higher level on the NCLEX pass rate. Taking one more deep dive and looking at trends related to RN pass rates on this by region, we can see that the majority of the regions throughout our state are mirroring the national trends, such that in the past 3 years we've seen a decline, except the Southwest region has seen an increase over the past 3 years, so they have noted some improvements there. Our trends for the PN pass rates in the regions are not much different than the RN pass rates, so regions are usually performing around the same level when we're comparing the RN and the PN pass rates. One of the final things that I think is really important and I wanted to be able to stress to you is looking at our programs per accreditation categories and accreditation status. So when we're looking at this slide, we're looking at only the pass rates on the RN, and programs that are accredited tend to do much better on the NCLEX pass compared to those that are approved. Probationary programs are identified by the Board of Nursing as not meeting the minimum benchmarks, and the Board of Nursing will identify them as probationary. And non-accredited programs are performing at less than 20% for last year, 2022. So I've identified two opportunities for improvement in our state, one related to faculty and one related to our NCLEX. And now I would like to share with you a strategy to be able to address the faculty shortage and what we're doing at the Florida Center for Nursing. We are implementing a Florida Center for Nursing Learning Academy. And the purpose of the Learning Academy will be to develop a distance learning infrastructure for nursing education and advancing faculty competencies. So being very responsive to the need of the limited applicant pool, we want to be able to develop an infrastructure to be able to increase the qualified applicants. And this comes from our statutory requirements. The goal of the Learning Academy will be to increase the number of qualified faculty and clinical preceptors, support the faculty development, making sure that they have the tools and the skills that they need to do a good job, promote advanced nursing education, and develop the best practices in the academic preparation and the continuing education needs of nurse educators in clinical settings, nurse faculty in academic settings, and clinical preceptors. And then I would like to present to you a strategy that we would like to use to increase statewide NCLEX pass rates. And this is going to be implemented as our Florida Center for Nursing sharing sessions. These are going to be presentations from experts throughout Florida, and we can also rely on some of our national colleagues that have identified best practices. The Florida Center for Nursing is going to offer these educational opportunities virtually, so all educational programs throughout the state will have the opportunity to participate, to learn the best practices. We'll provide them with the knowledge that then they can go take these strategies to their own institutions and implement so that we can see improvements throughout our state. So what are the implications? Again, thank you to you all for supporting the Florida Center and making sure that it was reestablished again and headquartered at the University of South Florida. It allows us to be a resource for the entire state. It allows us to provide statistically valid workforce data. We will continue to analyze trends and make all of our reports available for the public, for you all, and all of the data will be transparent. What does this mean for the future of nursing in Florida? The future of nursing in Florida is dependent on implementation of innovative strategies that will ensure an adequate supply of qualified nurses to meet the health needs of the Floridians. All of our work at the Florida Center will align with the National Academy of Medicine's recommendations to chart a path to health equity. Long-range planning. So I told you some immediate things that we're going to do in response to our 2022 survey results and the findings, but long-range, it's going to be important that the Florida Center continues to build and operate at peak organizational efficiency and effectiveness. And the way that we do this is that we are structuring into four pillars, if you will, as you see on this slide. We have four pillars of operations, data, programming, and communication and marketing. And these are the structures that will continue to make the work of the Florida Center successful. And the arrow there is representing that these pillars are not operating in silos. We are collaborating within our team and across the state. And that concludes my presentation. I would love to turn it over to Dr. Menon for the next part, please. Is that appropriate?
Before we do, we want to open it up for members to ask questions. I'm just saying, my wife used to be a nursing educator, and she, the downside to the job was driving all over Tampa Bay to do her job, so I'm gratified to see your recommendation for implement more distance learning. With that, I will open it up to questions for Dr. Letourneau. Are there any members? Rep. Hawkins?
First of all, thank you for being here. And I just ran out of question. I think you're dealing with trying to find the qualified people to teach, but when they can go to the private sector and make so much more money, I think we're seeing that through a lot of industries. But I just want to thank you for taking the time yesterday. I want to tell you the packet you put together comparing the different districts and areas is very helpful and appreciate what you do. But anything we can do to help you be successful in your position, I'm here for you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Representative. You're recognized. Good. No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Hawkins. And the packet that he's referring to are the regional pages that are included, the PDFs. Thank you so much.
Anything else, Rep. Hawkins? Okay. Rep. Rudman, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Dr. Letourneau, again, just an excellent presentation. We're glad to help and assist in any way we can. And I was just curious, if you wouldn't mind going back to the slide showing the pass rates by region.
Yes, sir.
You're recognized.
There you are. I just wanted to be sure I'm reading that correctly. Where would the Florida Panhandle be on that graph?
So the Florida Panhandle is the Northwest region, and on those regional one-pagers that I've given you all as part of the packet, it has a definition of the counties that are associated with each of those regions.
Thank you so much.
Next is Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Letourneau, for this presentation. Really thrilled to see this presentation and what you guys are doing at the Center for Nursing at USF St. Petersburg. That's part of my district, so I am a little biased, but I think this is really important that we have this data. Going back to these NCLEX passage rates, last month in Chair Shope's in a higher ed appropriations subcommittee meeting, we had a presentation by the Department of Education, and I asked a question about where we were in terms of NCLEX passage rates compared to the national average. And the answer, as I recall it, was that we were higher than the national average. This data clearly shows that that is incorrect and that our state has a lot to do to improve and make sure that we are training our future nurses. Wondering how this information is shared with the department so that when we're looking at funding, particularly new programs like Pipeline, that we're directing it towards the most effective institutions in our state.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Cross. And I wasn't there for that presentation to be able to speak to what was being looked at and compared, but I can tell you that what we're doing in the Florida Center is looking at our NCLEX pass rates at the state level. So when we're looking at our aggregate pass rates at the state level, Florida is much below the national averages, no matter which parts of our programs we look at. And what I mean by that are the RN and the PN programs. There are programs that perform at or above the national pass rate. So if they were giving you a cross-section of programs, then that could have been a true statement that there are some that are at or above.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Do you know how many non-accredited programs we have in the state, and if they are eligible to receive state funding?
You're recognized.
If I may change to the accreditation slide. So pardon me for not being able to have an interactive slide, but when I've built this, I was able to hover my cursor over and get an exact number. So for an approximate number of the non-accredited programs in 2022, it looks like we were slightly above 70. So.
And are they eligible for state funding?
That question I'll have to refer back to and get back to. Are you referring to specifically the pipeline funding or the line funding?
Yes. Okay.
If I may respond to that afterwards, I'll find that information so I don't misspeak.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Ranking Member Tant, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually have three questions. I can be indulged. First of all, thank you for your presentation. I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, we all have just kind of lived through a healthcare scare with all of us after the pandemic, and we've had a shift in the marketplace and the workforce, and so I appreciate everything you're doing. I have a couple of questions. Can you talk with me a little bit about the passage rates? Like, what happens with people who take the test the second time? Does that impact the school's grade or school standing, where the student graduated from, or the testing entity? That was the first question.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your question, Representative. So when we're reporting our data from the Florida Center, we are looking at only the first-time pass rates. And that is to make sure that we are looking at consistency at the national level. So when we're comparing our Florida rates, we want to make sure that we are also using the same methodology that other states are using when they're reporting. Let me back up a little bit. Absolutely, if candidates are not successful on the first attempt, they can remediate, they can practice some more, they can go back and take a second attempt. So there is still opportunity that those candidates can enter our nursing workforce. There are accrediting bodies that are now changing some of the standards to look at second attempt pass rates as part of the accreditation process. But the way we're doing it for the Florida Center is still the first attempt pass rates.
Ranking Member, you're recognized for your two follow-ups.
Thank you. So in respect to that question, do other states only count the first passage? So that's how that's done. Okay, thank you. So my second question is, I did see recently that the Florida Commission for Independent Education eliminated several fraudulent schools from the list of schools that are doing this. How do you expect that to impact test scores, do you think? What's your anticipation of that statewide?
You're recommended.
Thank you. Statewide, if we are eliminating the programs that are fraudulent, then in those programs had pass rates that were taking our state levels down, then we would anticipate that we would see a change once those programs are removed, and we would hope that we would see an increase. Yes.
And a follow-up to that, Mr. Chair? Thank you. And what would the timeline on that be, you think?
You're recognized.
Representative, honestly, that's a tough question to answer because I think there are so many variables into the timeline, and the Florida Center absolutely will collaborate with the Florida Board of Nursing to look at what are the processes and how this is going to be impacted. But unless we knew exactly who all of the candidates were, did they receive an authorization to test, where are they, have they already scheduled it, I'm sorry, I don't know that I would be able to give an accurate answer as far as a definite time.
And my last question, Mr. Chair, and then I'll be done.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you expect a positive impact for if you were to offer the exam in Spanish? And are there any plans to do so?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I am not aware of any plans to offer it in a second, but that doesn't mean that it's not in discussions from the NCSBN level. What we want to do from the Florida Center for Nursing is really collect more data and identify the needs of the candidates in our state. Right now, we don't have in the Florida Center data related to primary and additional languages of our nursing workforce and of the candidates, and that will be really important because that evidence can support what we want to do moving forward to increase the success.
Rep Henson, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this informative program, and I really appreciate the efforts that reopening this center so that we can get control of this situation. Thank you so much. I was looking at the graph that you put up by region a minute ago, and that one, and noticed that the Southeast, the South, and some unknown. Do you know what that unknown is?
So right,
you're recognized. Don't worry about it. I have this all the time. Go ahead.
Thank you. Right now, when we are looking at our unknowns, if I can give you a little bit more about the methodology of where the data comes from, and then I'll be able to explain why we had to categorize some as the unknown. So the data for the NCLEX pass rates are coming from the NCSBN. They share with the Florida Board of Nursing, who then shares with us a raw data set. The raw data set is individualized, de-identified data. So students will identify which program they've graduated from, what was their graduation date, and that comes to us in raw format. Our data engineers and our data team will then categorize that into what you see here. We do have some data points that don't align with approved or accredited programs from the department, and we didn't want to eliminate that data, so we categorize those as an unknown until we can do a further investigation.
Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for one follow-up.
Thank you. Can you explain what's happening in the South and Southeast that is so different from the rest of the state?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. Right now, it needs further investigation is what the Florida Center needs to do. We are just recently reestablished, and what we're doing is putting out our findings and putting out our data, and just like any scientific study, it generates additional questions, which shows the need for our center, and it shows that we have so much more work to do. So now that we do identify some of these trends and we see something's not part of the ordinary in some of these regions, let's investigate what is happening. And let's also investigate and recognize those programs in those regions who are doing fantastic. Let's learn the best practices and see if we can start spreading that and scaling it throughout our state. So I'm sorry I can't answer an exact question of what's happening, but we will continue to investigate.
Mr. Chair, one last question.
One more.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So in terms of staff and the need for staff, and teaching is my heart. Do you think practicing nurses make better teachers than, let's see, theoretical nurses? And if so, can we offer as a state some kind of incentive? Because I'm believing that practicing nurses would make better educators because they actually know what's going on sites. Could we offer as a state some incentives to get practicing nurses to actually teach?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I love your question. Thank you so much for that. And so absolutely, those practicing nurses are clinically relevant. Their expertise is so needed, and absolutely, they can help to train the future nurses. We need to be able to tap into them. We also need to recognize that practicing nurses may have specialty training in the area of the populations which they serve, mm-hmm. and that nursing education is also a specialty area in nursing. So when we are pulling on and relying on those expert nurses, expert clinical nurses, to come and serve in the role of educator, it will be very important that we set them up for success, and that's our goal with the Florida Center's Learning Academy, is to give them the training to help them to develop so they will be successful.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you all. Next is Representative Schoaf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you for this presentation. This is very important stuff. The state of Florida and the legislature in recent years has prioritized nursing. It's spent a lot of resources and time on trying to address some of these issues. Last year, we allocated or appropriated $125 million for the pipeline and the line funding. I just wanted to see if you could help this committee understand, were all of those dollars used? Are there better ways to use them? What can we do to help you use them effectively?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative, I would be out of my scope if I answered those questions. The Florida Center has not tracked the pipeline, the quantity of programs who have participated in pipeline or line, and I don't think that I would be able to accurately answer what's been used and what hasn't been used.
Shelf, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. And really what I'm getting to, though, is you had mentioned the faculty shortage. Have you taken a look at solutions for the faculty shortage by using the excess funds?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So absolutely, those innovative strategies are going to be critical to help us with the faculty shortage and to fill those vacancies that we're seeing across the state. Line and pipeline fundings are opportunities for us to bring the industry and the education together and come together with the solutions to better prepare. So yes, thank you.
Rep. Burfield, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to you taking the current role that you have of leadership with the center was responsible for taking the medical quality assurance information that was provided associated with licensure and evaluating it and determining and actually identifying the anticipated shortage of 65,000 nurses in 2020. Now, granted, we had a global pandemic and nobody anticipated anything along those lines. But my question is, as you are looking forward and doing the analysis, because I noticed on one of your slides that that was one of the main responsibilities, how do you feel that you can better assist us as we are identifying those gaps or those needs? Are you going to be providing recommendations, or how is that communication and disconnect going to be prevented in the future?
You're recognized.
Thank you. If I understand your question, is what is our plan to make sure that we make readily available all of our findings in the report so that you have the information that you need to make well-informed decisions? Or, I'm sorry if I didn't
understand. Mr. Chairman, may I clarify?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, you may have had the data, it may have been out there, but I don't know that there were ever any recommendations that were made. So based on the data, how are you going to better assist us as you're making those analysis to ensure that we're able to take the steps that can be taken to support you to ensure there's a shortage or some of these other issues like faculty are addressed prior to becoming such a significant issue for the state?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. So I better understand now. And what the Florida Center will do is to make sure that we develop a statewide strategic plan and publicly announce it. It will be marketed. It will be available to all of you on our website through social media campaigns. That statewide strategic plan will include recommendations for improvement. And then if I can take it a step further, because I feel like what I've learned with the way the Florida Center was previously organized was such that it did do a lot of the data analysis and reporting, but there wasn't always opportunity at that time to be able to test some innovative strategies. And I think that's where we're at right now. In 2023, the Florida Center is poised to be able to test some innovative solutions and really look at evidence-based practices that are going to make the improvements. And thank you again for the support of you all to allow us to do that.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, did you have a question? Okay, all right. Seeing no further questions, I will recognize Dean Menon from the College of Nursing at USF for her presentation. Thank you, Dr. Letourneau.
Good morning again, and I'm Usha Menon. I am Dean of the College of Nursing at the University of South Florida and Senior Associate Vice President at USF Health. And Mr. Chair, may I have your permission to respond to two questions from the last round?
Of course, yeah, just as part of your presentation, you can present whatever you'd like.
Thank you. So unfortunately, the representatives asked the question out here, but I'll try to answer two very quickly. In terms of the pipeline and the line funding, I can tell you that all of the pipeline money was given out was $40 million to the state university system. I could speak to that. It has been tremendously helpful. At USF alone, we hired 42 people last year because of the pipeline, and so we were operating under par with faculty. Faculty were overworked. And clearly students don't do well. So the line funding, there was $6 million allocated under line. Every penny of that was allocated. There were three rounds. Industry stepped up like I have never seen them come to the table before. It was an absolutely amazing opportunity for these healthcare partners to come in. And if you want further details at some point, I can tell you what we applied for, and that has really been amazing for our students. Thank you. So I'm here to talk with you about a strategy that we have developed to address some of the pipeline issues that we're having in terms of the nursing shortage. This is a very real problem. The 60,000 nurse shortage in 2030 is not something we can address 2 days before the deadline. It's a human capital problem, right? So we've got to be doing something about it now. And you've heard some amazing data from the Florida Center for Nursing that will help inform this. But a few years ago, we thought about the fact that there are a lot of veterans that want to transition into civilian life or remain in the reserves, but actually want to have a career that is outside of the military. So we applied for funding through the Health Resource Services Administration called HRSA. in 2013, and we were funded to run something called the Veteran to Bachelor of Science Nursing Program. This was only for medics and corpsmen. It was a pilot. It was funded for 5 years. And we did some pre-launch focus groups to try to understand what the reason is. You know, why would these people want to come into a program like this? They have access to programs all over the country. Well, medics and corpsmen expressed frustration about perceived barriers. They were unable to obtain academic credit for their military training and their experience. They had difficulty transferring college credits that they had earned while they were on active duty. They had lower GPAs sometimes from the college courses that they had taken, so they weren't able to meet the standards at some of the schools. There was a lack of support and understanding of the challenges of reintegration once they come out of active duty. And there were no mechanisms to deal with disruptions if they were in the reserves and actually had to be deployed. And there was a lot of uncertainty. They're using a good portion of their GI education bill, a lot of uncertainty in terms of getting into school. So this program was funded for 5 years, and we call it the VCARE program. We're very, very proud of it. It was an accelerated nursing pathway for medics and corpsmen. We awarded credit for their military education and training. I know some of you met amazing students that I brought with me a couple of weeks ago, and one of them is a great example. He had 12 years as a medic in the Army. He certainly deserved credit for those years and his experience, absolutely. And I don't know about you, but if I'm going to the hospital, I mean, can you imagine having someone like that be there to take care of you? He's been deployed. He's been a warfighter, and he has practical, amazing experience. He's a very, very competent clinician. So it's exciting for us to be able to give them this back. We enrolled 10 cohorts of students in the time that the grant was funded. We had 132 students go through the program. It was the most diverse undergraduate pathway for us at USF, with 49% males and 21% Hispanic. And this is the exciting part. Their overall NCLEX pass rate, wait for it, was 92%. So you just heard what we're going through. So this was amazing. When the funding ended, we just really couldn't let this program go. It was too important. And what we were hearing from those veterans was very important to us. So we continue to invest as best as we could. We have some challenges, but we are continuing. And our students will tell you that we are the only program in Florida that was allowing them credit for the work experience they were coming in with. So we have 160 students now since past funding that have graduated. Only two students have dropped out of the pathway over 9 years. So that is a really, really strong program. We recently did an alumni survey with them. We got about a 40% response rate. So I'll just tell you some interesting things. 54% were first-generation college students. 64% had between 6 to 10 years of military experience prior to enrollment in our program. 100% of them felt the USF College of Nursing faculty and staff were understanding of the challenges. 68% relied on their military healthcare experience to get them through school. 70% relied on their military leadership experience to get them through school. This is really strong data. 27% had a diagnosis of PTSD. And 100% said that they would recommend this program to their peers, and they have. And the most valuable service in this program, because we had the funding to do it, was that we had a College of Nursing military liaison. Since then, I'm excited to tell you that I have appointed the inaugural Chief Officer for Military and Veteran Affairs at the College of Nursing at USF. Things changed a little bit when the funding went away, because we didn't have the support to have the advisors, the faculty that could be dedicated. People have donated time, but we're still trying to get them through the program. In terms of next steps, what I would like to recommend from our program is to think of ways to expand the enrollment across Florida, and I'll speak to that in a minute. But we just applied for a $3 million Department of Labor grant, and that is to expand beyond medics and corpsmen to all veterans who might be interested in pursuing a career in nursing. This model can be used across other healthcare professions as well. It is not something that is, you know, just proprietary to nursing. And my second recommendation is to consider funding a center of excellence, sort of like the Florida Center for Nursing, that standardizes and puts into place some robust measures for evaluation, metrics for looking at how these programs are going. But again, so schools are not competing against each other. I've got a better credit program than you do, et cetera. We do not have time for this kind of competition when we are facing the crisis that we are today in the nursing profession. And that kind of center will not only help schools across Florida, you know, bring veterans back with reintegration and providing them with that professional opportunity, but I can guarantee you that we will be a model for the country because there is nothing like this. There are a few programs, but they're mostly just veteran-friendly. They're not talking about an accelerated pathway to go through. And I will end with just a couple of quotes for you from our students with their permission. Without the VBSN program, the Veteran to Bachelor of Science, I may never have been given the opportunity to attend nursing school. I did not have a competitive entrance GPA. My highest level of education was a GED. The VBSN took a chance on me, and I am forever grateful. The VBSN is a great transitioning program for military medics. I recommended this program to members of my unit and have had three members attend and graduate after I graduated. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Menon, for your presentation. Rep Rudman, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dean Menon. I want to especially commend you for leading the fight to get our military veterans with medical experience streamlined into the nursing field. I think what you are doing is exceptional. Your VBSN program really sets you apart from other schools, and I know you're aware of this. There are other schools in the state who maybe they're not sure how to proceed or how to give these veterans credit for their training, if at all. I also love the comments that you made earlier about their capabilities. I agree with you about their capabilities. In fact, I was at an event in my district where I made the argument, if you were in a traumatic car wreck, you would rather have the combat medic than have me, the physician. So I definitely agree with you. Which is a roundabout way of getting to my question. Are you familiar with my combat medics to nurses bill, House Bill 517?
You're recognized, Dean.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much for those comments, and I am familiar with it. And I think it's an important way to start looking at that standardization that we are recommending and putting those best practices across Florida.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
And so, in your opinion, Dean Menon, since you are a pioneer in this movement, if such a bill were to follow the example that you've set and allow the state to provide guidance, uniformity, and consistency for our combat and special forces medics to get credit for their training and their experience and standardize that in every single nursing program across the state, would you agree that would be a good thing?
You're recognized.
I would agree it would be a very good thing. With the one ask that I would have is that whatever group is putting together those best practices, that faculty are included, because that's going to be important for our accreditation, that faculty are included in this decision because of shared governance that our accreditation requires from us.
Rep Burfield, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question kind of ties into what Dr. Rudman was talking about. And I guess that question is, are there other barriers or is there any action we need to take in helping you to break down the barriers where you can give that accreditation?
You're recognized.
Thank you again. It's a great question. The biggest barriers that schools are going to have is dedicated advisors and faculty. This is a group you saw, 27% of them were diagnosed with PTSD. Reentry is hard, reintegration is very difficult. Understanding the curriculum that comes from the different military units is also quite challenging. Some of them have the equivalent of a community college, I think the Air Force does. Others simply talk about work experience, and that's very difficult to parse through and say, well, what does that mean? Did you stand on the sideline? Did you actually do CPR? So I think having dedicated staff and funding for those staff that can serve as these military liaisons and specific advisors to the students is going to be very, very important.
Any Representative Schoaf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you offering that dollar amount. I think it was $46 million you said was allocated for the line and pipeline program. Of that $46 million, if I remember right, I believe that was for the universities, and the rest of the $125 million we allocated went to universities, colleges, and tech centers. Being that the Florida Center for Nursing mission is to recommend strategies, do you have a strategy that you could recommend to us on ways to use either that amount or more or less to help with this workforce shortage?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Schoaf. So I'll just split that amount. It was $6 million for the line and $40 million for the pipeline for the state university system. And I think, as I mentioned, we've been able to hire faculty mostly and faculty staff advisors to support these students going forward. In terms of strategies, and this actually relates back to an earlier question as well about practicing nurses, perhaps they're more qualified or to teach. I think support within these systems to work with industry to allow those practicing nurses to teach part-time in our schools, but have a seamless kind of back and forth will be very important. One of the reasons 92,000 nursing students around eligible applicants to nursing school were turned away around the country last year is because we don't have enough faculty and we don't have enough clinical placements. So if something like GME, General Medical Education, if there was a general nursing education opportunity in Florida, that would create some really seamless partnerships with industry, and that would be one strategy that's going to be important for us because we're all scrambling. And if we have another public health emergency, which we may or may not, it's these students that get kicked out of the hospital system first, understandably, because nobody has time to walk with them, and they may actually be a liability in that situation if they're, much junior students.
Any follow-up? And any further questions for Dean Menon? Rep. Escamani, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair. Thank you for your presentation. Just to the point you made about the need for clinical hours, what's the proposed solution as we have such a huge population of nursing students? But as someone who has worked at Planned Parenthood, we would get so many requests for nursing students over the years, and we never had enough room for all the requests we would get. So I am curious, what's the proposed solutions when it comes to that integration?
You're recognized.
Thank you. One thing that we don't do as much that we could do is utilize more simulation. We can go up to almost 50% simulation in the curriculum. Now, you want to be careful because you don't want to send students out that have never touched a patient and talked with them and never looked somebody in the eye and, held someone's hand when they were dying. That's important. But we could use more simulation. But that goes back to the pipeline funds. If they could remain allocated to these nursing schools, we could expand our simulation centers and allow more students to get some of these virtual reality experiences, before we sent them out. The learner density, I think, in our region is a difficult one for me to give you an immediate strategy for. I think if there was some sort of fair system to help integrate clinical placements, regionally or even regionally across Florida in ways that would be fair to the various schools based on the number. So my program, on a good day, I have 2,200 students. That's a lot of students to place, both on the undergraduate and the graduate side. So I think a fair system that doesn't allow somebody that has more money, to be able to sort of put their thumb on the scale and say they're getting their students in would be something to consider.
One follow-up.
Thanks. Thank you for that. Do you see any disparities around rural areas compared to the urban cores of where a student's preference is? And, can we find a way to also maybe address that type of balance act?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, students do want to practice in those urban areas. They all want to be in the ICU. They all want to be in the neonatal intensive care unit until they realize how difficult it is. And so they last about a year. I see hundreds of students coming through saying, I want to do pediatrics. And then they realize babies actually die and they say, I don't want to do this anymore. So there might be incentives. I think loan repayment programs, especially on the graduate side, allowing primary care nurses to go out to practice in those areas would be important. The other is, in the state of Texas, they actually have blanket permission for primary care advanced practice nurses to open clinics in underserved areas. And in Florida, that is a much more challenging process, although we have autonomous practice, for which I thank every one of you very, very much every day. I think those are some strategies to think about, is what incentives will get them to work. But a quick strategy might be to really put into place a loan repayment.
Rep, did you have any further? Okay. We actually have plenty of time. But anyone else? Questions for Dean Menon? All right. Well, thank you for your presentation. We're going to now recognize President Henningsen to introduce Dr. Cortez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just get the PowerPoint up and running.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. A great honor to come up here on behalf of the College of Central Florida, talk a little bit about an innovative solution that we've been working on since before the pandemic to expand nursing education and allied health sciences, and trying to find some creative, innovative solutions to do that. Joining me up to me today is my wonder team over here, Dr. Stephanie Cortez, Dean of our Health Science area, and Dr. Jennifer Frines, who is our Associate Vice President over Workforce Programs. But let me jump in a little bit. You may think, College of Central Florida, whereabouts are you? Well, we're North Central Florida. We're a member of the Florida College System, the Great 28. We're one of the older ones, not the oldest college, but we were founded in 1957, serving Marion, Citrus, and Levy counties, also known as Horse Country, and now Distribution Center of Florida, if you drive by in 75. We've got six campuses across 4,000 square miles, including a 104-acre privately donated farm for our agribusiness and equine programs, as well as an 88,000 square foot Alliance of American Museums accredited museum, the same as the Smithsonian, which only 6% of the museums in the country have that level of accreditation. Please do come visit if you ever want to see some great art. We're just under 10,000 students. We've been recognized by the Aspen Institute consistently for high quality as one of the top colleges in the country in five of their six cycles. We're top 1% consistently every year in the nation for affordability when it comes to going through the college. Three out of four students graduate with zero debt from the college. And we were recently recognized with the number one nursing program in all of Florida by registerednursing.org. We'll take it. Whoever gives it to us, we'll take it. As a recognition for the great work our team is doing there in nursing. We had a big call to action in terms of changes and transitions that were happening in North Central Florida. As you've heard already, strong demand for AS graduates, the nursing students, as well as BSN. We did not have a BSN program when I started a few years back at the college. We've since started that one up. We have a new level two trauma center with HCA Florida Ocala. That added to the demand for the other programs in allied health sciences beyond nursing so that our college could support that region. We did not have a university in our backyard, so we're kind of it for that particular area of Florida. The four programs we are starting up this year, cardiovascular tech, sonography, respiratory care, and surgical services, all AS degrees, all very expensive programs, but critically, critically needed. As the hospitals told me, they were knocking on my door to start new programs, then they kicked the door down to get the new programs. So whatever it takes, we got to get it done. We've also had strong demand for EMS and paramedic grads, and our dean is going to talk to you a little bit about the bridge program we've created for that, and we've had some great success getting those folks into the nursing fields. Looking on to solutions, so what did we do? We had all those challenges for a call to action. We came up with some creative solutions. One is we had to make sure it was a strategic priority at the college. Top down, this was one of our top priorities to make sure we find solutions and whatever it takes to get that ball across the goal line. We closed programs. We looked at everything we're doing. Are there programs that we feel are no longer relevant? Our business leaders feel they're no longer relevant? Some we may have been doing for 30 years, but if they're not needed, we needed to close those down, and we needed to transfer those resources over into the high-demand programs that our business does need. We closed over 30 different programs, and that did help free up a lot of resources for us to start some of these and expand some of these programs. We also wanted to come up with an innovative facility solution. Rather than coming up to you for a big, glorified, huge building, a brand new facility to expand the nursing areas and some of the other buildings that are past their useful life, We wanted to find a way to save taxpayer monies on that and find a creative solution to that. We've been very successful getting local donor money, so the return on investment to your investment at the state, we feel we have been one of the best ones in the state for that. When you look at our size, so we've been very successful raising multiple millions of dollars to go into those buildings to partner with you on that. This was the original plan. We needed new nursing facilities. As I said, we're an older college. Our buildings are, some of them are past their useful life. This was going to be our Farm Bureau building on I-75 at Gainesville, if you know that big building everybody drives by, the icon on that one. This was going to be Marion County's right on I-75 to the south. Great idea, four floors, 85,000 square feet, but a price tag in today's dollars, probably over $45 million to build. We couldn't find anybody, and it's just too difficult, too big, too expensive with all the demand. So how do you get there without starting off with a big new building? One bite at a time. And we tried to figure out an innovative solution to that, which was, let's renovate two older buildings. Now, we may have to free up some buildings and close some programs that may not be high mission critical as health science and nursing. We did that. Our first one was a gym. We had basketball and volleyball, won the national championship. I'll just say that at our college level, when you win the national championship, ESPN didn't come knocking on the door with any rights, any funding to help the college. We got a big bill to send the team out there. So we looked at that. It's hard when you got a great quality athletic program there, but we knew we needed facilities at a lower cost. This was more important to our business community and the critical care needed for our citizens. So we closed all three of those programs. It just opened this January, thanks to your funding. 24,000 square feet, state-of-the-art facilities in all four of those programs I mentioned earlier. We also are repurposing another building for EMS and paramedic expansion because that has got strong growth that we want to have parallel right next to our health and nursing facilities as that grows on. That one has not been funded. That's actually a request this year for another committee to try and get that done as the third phase of this new health science project. The last one there you see is build a new center for nursing. That one you did fund last year, so thank you for that. That's the only new building out of that 85,000 square feet. You'll see these three buildings are pretty close to the same square footage. That one, the board yesterday just approved the architectural arrangements for that. That should be two stories, smaller footprint. You put all three of those together, we're saving taxpayers in Florida about $15 million in terms of, and getting the same level and quality of outputs as well as capacity expansion in those programs. We've also raised over $7 million locally just for those buildings and the matches to help, again, provide a greater return on investment to you. Line funding, I can't tell you how thankful I am for the pipeline and line funding because we have been doing whatever it takes to expand these programs. We were the largest in the state in our system. We had a $6.7 million local donation. It was $10.3 million, but they gave us that donation contingent on if you match 10.3 out of the $19 million fund for our system, we'll give you 10.3. So when DOE asked, well, how much are you going to ask for, Jim? $10.3 million. I'm going to ask for all of it. We were able to, when you had to expend the money in only 1 year, that became a challenge. How do you spend $10.3 million in 1 year on equipment and things? That's a little harder to do when you can't use it for buildings. So we got awarded $6.7 million for simulation equipment, expanding our nursing faculty and staff to expand capacity, and other program equipment that's needed for those areas. So tremendous local donation. The donation of $6.7 million we did get, essentially it has to be for Citrus County, one of our county's residents, because the donor restriction there was it has to be for Citrus County residents. Out of our nursing program there, they can attend now any of our campuses for free. So they can go through nursing and get a two-year nursing degree at the number one rated nursing program for free, thanks to a gift like that. I would love to be able to do that with a line funding if we were allowed to, but we weren't allowed to use it for endowment purposes. But barriers to entry in terms of getting more nursing students at our level is affordability and being able to pay for that. And if we can tell them, you know, this is free tuition and books to get through, we're going to get a lot more nursing applications in there. So real happy about the success, and I hope you do fund that again this year. I'm going to ask Dr. Stephanie Cortez to come up. She's the real champion behind this. Whatever she asks for, she seems to get. She's very needy, but there's a reason for that. This is needy not only across our entire state and our region, We've got to find more ways to get these folks through and find innovative solutions that are cost-effective to get our organizations moving quickly to meet that need. I know we're in the lunch hour. We set it up as a pie, coincidentally, but that's the three pieces to our pie of success: having the innovative pathways, creating innovation throughout the inside of that program to expand capacity and quality, and focusing on excellence. You've got to have excellence outcomes, and you'll see that we've had some great outcomes in terms of NCLEX, placement rates, wages, and I think there's a lot more we can do here, and we're excited to be here to tell you about that. But Dr. Cortez, why don't you come on up? I'm going to turn it over to you. If that's okay, Mr. Chair?
That'll be fine. Dr. Cortez, you're recognized. Thank you, President Henningsen.
Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to be here to talk about something that I love, nursing education, and how can we make it better. I've been a nurse for a little over 20 years. I graduated from the University of Florida for all three of my degrees, bachelor's, master's, and doctorate in nursing. And I've been in nursing education for about 16 years. I have been fortunate enough to come into the College of Central Florida and really grow in my profession here. I've been nurtured as a faculty member. And so hearing things like what the Florida Center for Nursing is planning to do to continue to expand those efforts and make that continuing education available statewide is just really, really exciting. So I'll start with our P, pathways. So here at the College of Central Florida, we've actually had a nursing program. Our associate degree nursing program was started in 1963, making this year our 60th anniversary. And as one of the oldest nursing programs in the state, we stand behind our consistent approach to achieving quality outcomes. But we also understand that in order to remain relevant and uphold consistency and outcome achievement, you must be willing to change as the needs of your students change. As a state college, we recognize that there are many pathways toward achieving the degree of to become a registered nurse. Nursing education can no longer take a one-size-fits-all approach, and that's why at CF, we offer five pathways to the RN. So for our traditional student, you can see on the screen, we offer three different pathways: full-time, part-time, and accelerated. The full-time pathway is offered on both our Ocala and our Citrus campuses. Our Citrus campus is located in Lecanto, Florida, and students are able to complete their nursing core classes over four semesters. We start this program twice a year, both in the fall and in the spring, offering a lot of opportunity for students to jump right in there toward their nursing degree. The part-time option we offer only on our Ocala campus, and we offer that program once a year in January. This program really is built for the student who needs to work during their educational. And so that program basically takes all of our nursing core credits and spreads them out over six semesters. So they're taking a little bit smaller amount of nursing courses spread out over six semesters. And then our accelerated option, this is one of our newest traditional pathways that we offer. This program is really a full-time accelerated option. So it's spread out over four semesters, but the way that we have laid the courses out, students can complete that program 7 months sooner than a traditionally enrolled full-time student. And then as we move into our different LPN and paramedic bridge programs, those programs truly are the fastest opportunity for a student who comes to us with prior healthcare licensure and education to move toward the associate degree in nursing. With the licensed practical nurse or LPN bridge and the paramedic bridge program, we recognize the knowledge and the skills that these professionals have gained in their prior educational programs and build upon that in pursuit of the registered nurse licensure. LPN and paramedic bridge students are able to complete the associate degree program in 1 year time. That's incredible, right? Making this our fastest pathway to the RN. And many of these programs continue, or many of these students enrolled in these programs continue to work, which is vital for them. But taking that even a step further, our paramedic students tend to work at with the fire stations. They need a shift-friendly opportunity to enroll in a nursing program. And so we have, you know, they're working these 24 hours on, 48 hours off shifts. That's not really conducive to traditional nursing education. And so we have had to be very deliberate about how we are offering these pathways for these students. And interestingly, you know, you can't, you know, underestimate the knowledge and skills that these students are bringing in with them. You guys have all talked about it through the wonderful presentation from University of South Florida and their combat medic or a veteran program. You know, they come with such an exceptional skill set, and the outcomes that we see with these students are tried and true. You know, they are healthcare professionals and they understand what it takes. They are passing the NCLEX on the first attempt. They have, in general, a very high NCLEX pass rate when we compare them to our traditional student. So it's an excellent opportunity for those students who wish to advance their career ladder and become a registered nurse. In addition to the five pathways to the associate degree, we also offer a career ladder opportunity with our post-licensure RN to BSN program. This is a fully online program that is tailored to fit the needs of a working registered nurse who is interested in advancing their career and potentially exploring leadership and administrative job opportunities that require a baccalaureate degree in nursing. This, too, includes an enrollment pathway that students can start and finish in 1 year's time. So that, too, is fantastic in terms of opportunity, but what's even better is due to the low cost that we offer at CF, many of these students are able to attend and complete their baccalaureate degree at little to no cost to them due to tuition reimbursement opportunities offered by their employers. So moving on into innovation, you know, what are some of the things that we have been able to accomplish over the last several years to ensure that we are preparing our students, our graduates for the workplace? You know, one of the biggest challenges that new nurses face is the ability to think quickly, recalling everything they've ever learned in nursing school at the drop of a hat, and being able to quickly analyze patient assessment information to make a decision about how to safely care for and address the needs of the patient. But this is not a new phenomenon. Even going back as far as 2005, researchers identified that only 35% of new nurse graduates were able to meet the expected outcome level for clinical judgment and decision making. Okay. While this isn't a new phenomenon, it is something that has gotten progressively worse over time as we are seeing patients in the hospital who are sicker, patients who are 10 years ago would have been admitted into an intensive care unit, now on a general medical surgical floor, often being cared for by a new graduate. Because I don't have to share with you, you know, the mass exodus that has happened in our profession as we have, you know, gone through this pandemic. We are seeing one in four nurses step away from the bedside. That's a problem. So these new graduates really, really do need to be highly skilled at being able to think on their feet. So what do we do about this? Well, going back to 2016, we were fortunate to receive a gift from a local private donor and a local clinical partner that allowed us to purchase some really fantastic simulation equipment. And that was a game changer for us because now we were able to offer very specific and deliberately placed simulation experiences to every single one of our nursing students, allowing them the opportunity to practice their thinking, right? it's not just about, you know, putting an IV in or doing this and that. It's, it, you know, nursing education can no longer be task focused. It has to be focused on thinking exercises. But you don't want a student, a novice person, going out into a clinical environment and having to, you know, sort of think on their feet when they're not quite ready for that, because there can be negative outcomes for patients. So having and being able to have developed a robust simulation program at the College of Central Florida has been instrumental to making sure that our graduates are prepared for the demands that the nursing workforce is going to throw at them from day one. And that's really important to us, is that our students from day one are workforce ready. So, you know, interestingly, one of the, like, really cool experiences that we were able to establish very early on in our simulation program really came from a recommendation and some feedback that we received from one of our clinical partners. That clinical partner was saying that the biggest challenge that they were seeing in terms of new graduate preparation was the ability to critically think, prioritize care, and manage their time. And that, too, really wasn't different than what was going on across the national landscape. Going back to 2014 and 2015, researchers identified that 72% of new nurses were competent in basic skills. They could start an IV. They could insert a catheter. They could do these things. But only 13% of new graduates could appropriately set priorities. So what we did was we got to work. In 2017, we got this feedback, and we created really sort of our hallmark simulation experience that is tailored to the third semester nursing student. It's called a priority simulation, and we bring students in for a one-on-one simulation where they are assigned to three patients. They come in, and three simulated patients, I should say. So they come in, they receive morning report, they take part in the chart review through an electronic medical record, and then they have to make decisions about who they are going to care for first. This two-hour experience that every single one of our nursing students gets to take part in is so well received. They, across the board, are so thankful for the opportunity, because this has allowed them the opportunity to practice their critical thinking and clinical judgment in a safe environment where they didn't have to worry about making a mistake. In fact, we want them to make mistakes right there, because then we can debrief with them and we can, you know, problem solve and troubleshoot to ensure that those same mistakes are not repeated on an actual real life patient. In addition to the investment that CF has made in terms of purchasing simulation equipment, we've invested a lot of time, energy, and money in faculty development, which I think is super important to ensure that our nursing faculty has every access that they need to continually maintain best practice strategies. And, you know, whether that looks like funding conference attendance or bringing in nationally renowned speakers to our campus so that every single person can hear the message, we've been doing it. Those are really important investments that we have been able to make. And most recently, we have had several speakers come to our campus to speak to us about the next generation NCLEX. So I'm not sure if you've heard anything about the next generation NCLEX, but this will be rolling out in April of this year. And this is a different test plan that is highly, highly rooted in clinical judgment. So, you know, it will be interesting to see how our students do. It will be interesting to see how all students do. We feel that we have been doing our part for years to get our students ready for this, but this is very much It's not just a multiple choice question that these students are going to be getting. They're getting essentially electronic medical records, and they're answering case study type questions. So it should be very interesting. So we really believe that the faculty need to take ownership of, you know, being mentors and role models for our students, and our faculty have stepped up in that area, providing our students with various opportunities to meet with them and to, receive all of the supports that CF offers in terms of tutoring and, special meeting their needs. Because we're committed to the success of our student. And we believe that academics are really just one piece of the pie, if you will, to make a successful graduate. Recently, the CF Foundation funded a CF Nursing Leadership Development Fellowship, which is a 3-year project for selected nursing students in which they will participate in a year-long fellowship to develop leadership skills. Now, why is that important? That's important because these graduates, as soon as they graduate, they are going to be the leaders on their floor. They are going to step into charge nurse positions. They are going to step into, in some cases, unit manager positions. So this is a fully voluntary experience and not associated with any type of required coursework. Yet we have students competing for the opportunity to work alongside the faculty during this year-long program. And if you've ever worked with students, you understand that they don't sign up to do extra things typically. So we're very proud of the interest that's been taken there. But in addition to that, we also offer students the opportunity to have open dialogue with us through participation in our student leadership team. This is a group of elected students who participate in essentially a dean's council, and they meet with me twice a year and give me feedback on how it's going. And I truly think that that is one of the things that has allowed us the opportunity to maintain excellence through these very tumultuous years during the pandemic. We have maintained our program completion rate. We are, upper 70s in terms of nursing completion. We are very proud of that because, remember, our students that come to us in the state college system, they are not the university student. They face challenges every single day that in some cases derail them completely from completing their nursing education. Our NCLEX pass rates, we are really proud of the strides that we're making there, and especially proud of our students that are enrolled at our Citrus campus. 100% pass rate every single year for the last 3 years. That's during a pandemic, you know? So we're really, really proud of what's going on there. CF graduates are consistently among the highest in the state. We are above the state average, well above the state average, well above the national average, and we're leaders in the North Central region, which you saw the slides on your screen. You know, the North Central region is one of the higher performing regions in our state. One of the things that I think is vital as nursing programs are looking at where we're going is really evaluating the partnerships that you have developed with your community partners. And that is somewhere that I commend Dr. Henningsen for his work in relationship building and the work of our CF Foundation for telling our story, because without that, I don't know that we would have been able to sustain some of these, programs and really sustain our excellence through these, very difficult years. Our clinical partners understand that when a student is choosing to come to CF, they're choosing us for excellence, they're choosing us for our low price point, right? But what our employers also understand is that these students, most of the time, grew up in our service district. They chose to go to school here, and they're going to stay, right? And that's a really important thing for the clinical facilities and clinical partners to recognize. But, our interest in our students, our graduates, doesn't end at graduation. It doesn't end with job placement. We want to ensure that our graduates are workforce ready from day one. And as I said before, these new graduates are challenged from day one to make quick but deliberate decisions to maintain patient safety. So we want to make sure that we are providing them with everything that they need in order to do so. You've heard a lot about what the future of nursing looks like. We do have to think of innovative ways to expand our nursing programs, but we can't do that without faculty. We need to have faculty. So, you know, there have been, you know, maybe that looks like looking at your traditional program and expanding that. Maybe that looks like innovative pathway development, taking, as University of South Florida did, this veterans option or some other type of bridge option to sort of fast track students into a career in nursing. But the time to act is now, because you've seen the numbers. It's staggering. By 2035, over 70,000 openings in the state of Florida alone. That is wild. So we have to act now, and we have to figure out ways to expand our nursing programs and incentivize those high-performing nursing programs that allow them to expand while maintaining quality. That's really important. It means nothing if you just add a bunch of seats, but then they can't pass the licensure exam, right? So recruitment and retention of qualified faculty needs to be addressed because it is a limiting factor across the state for colleges as we are being asked to expand. But in addition to that, I shared with you a little bit about our simulation program. We have to reimagine the clinical experience. Clinical placements are very tight around the state, even in our area, which is considered not an urban area. We have students coming in from nursing programs in Tampa, in Orlando, coming into our area because they are so saturated in the urban areas. So this is a problem that is affecting every single region in our state. So identifying ways to incorporate simulation, not just throw a simulation into a class, making it deliberate, making it an experience that is not just a checkoff for a student to perform a skill, making sure that we are debriefing them appropriately and helping them work through their thinking. Because remember what I said, that's where it's at. So reimagining the clinical experience, but also, you know, the shift to that thinking-based clinical experience. So whether that happens in the simulation center, in the lab, in a clinical placement, it has to happen. So some of our results, things that we're continuing to work on. We are growing our nursing program, and we are sort of right in the thick of it there with adding, we have plans to add 175 seats to our nursing program. That is part of what our new building is going to allow us to do, but also we have to recruit and retain faculty. So we appreciate the funding that we have received so far to help us achieve those goals. We started our RN to BSN program in 2014. So over the last almost 10 years, we have grown that program from zero to 100. And as Dr. Henningsen mentioned, we have a ribbon cutting next week for our Allied Health Center. And we will eventually have up to, you know, over 200 students that we're serving in that building alone. So enrolled in programs like cardiovascular technology, respiratory care, sonography, and our surgical services. So, you know, as we've expanded our programs, as I mentioned, it's been really, really important for us to maintain that quality. And we're really proud of our outcomes there. Maintaining our, and actually growing our retention and completion rate, maintaining our NCLEX pass rates. Those are all things that we're very excited about. But, you know, the commitment from the nursing faculty and the college administration, I think, is truly what has given us the opportunity to make these things happen. The work of the faculty to develop innovative learning experiences for our students is truly unmatched. The nursing faculty at the College of Central Florida are some of the most dedicated you'll find anywhere. They lead by example and set the standard for excellence each and every day in the classroom. And I couldn't be more proud to work with them. They're nurses, they're leaders, they're innovators, and they are CF. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cortez. Are there any questions from members about the presentation by the College of Central Florida? Rep. Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's not a question. A poor frog won't croak about his own pond. I've said that several times this week. However, they are from my district, and I'm so, so proud of the work that they do. Dr. Henningsen is definitely a leader in industry. He works well with the partners in his community. And yeah, I'm not surprised we have 100% passing rate in every single program they have at the College of Central Florida. Just wanted to do that. Thank you.
Ranking Member Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Doctor, I can see why you say she's so successful at getting everything she wants. So very, very good presentation. Thank you so much. I found it very informative. Quick question about the reimagining of the clinical experience. Is there any way to partner with some of our rural outreach programs to help folks get that clinical experience since it's so tight in the urban areas?
Oh, you're recognized.
Sorry. Okay, thank you. Thank you for the question. I think there's a lot of things that we could do, frankly. I mean, you know, it's not, you can get clinical experience that is valuable and that will make a difference in the nurse that you're trying to train anywhere. It doesn't just have to happen in the hospital. Yes, registered nurses most typically work in an inpatient setting in a hospital, but we have a number of community partners that we utilize to, you know, put our students in situations where they can see what is really happening in our community, because that makes them a better nurse when they care for that patient on the inpatient setting. Mm-hmm.
Any other member questions? Seeing none, thank you, Dr. Cortez, President. And we do have some appearance cards from members of the public. We'll call Jack Corey, Florida Nursing Association.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank you and obviously Representative Mello for these presentations today, but especially the presentation from the Florida Center for Nursing. Florida Nurses Association strongly supports the Florida Center for Nursing and strongly supports continued funding for that institution. A recent study by the Gallup organization found that nurses, for the 22nd year in a row, were the most trusted profession. Without nurses, Mr. Chairman, we would have no hospitals. Thank you for all you're doing. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Next is David Micah Jr., Florida Hospital Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David Micah Jr. on behalf of the Florida Hospital Association and our more than 200 members across the state. I've had an opportunity to speak with many of you about this issue, so I'll keep my comments brief. Top issue for Florida's hospital. So encouraged by what the House has done on the Florida Center for Nursing, on the pipeline funding, the work we've seen the governor to continue that in his budget recommendations this year. And we're very encouraged to come alongside the legislature as they approach this issue. One stat I want to leave with you. We worked early on about 2 years ago to create that study with our members of the 65,000 number. But I want to highlight that with the work that's happened over the last year or two, where we're seeing 800 people a day move to Florida. Encouraged by that number, love that number, but that also expands that 65,000 number that we're seeing as well. Right now, hospitals are seeing about a 21% vacancy rate in our nurses. So when we talk about those practicums, we need nurses to come in. It's not just the pandemic piece, it's also that vacancy rate, because you can't take a nurse off the line to start training if we need them on the bedside as well. So we're encouraged to work with you all very much so. Thank you for the time, Mr. Chair, to focus on this very important issue. And if there's any questions, also happy to answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next is Bob Harris, Florida Association of Independent Nursing Schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, good morning. Good afternoon. I apologize. My name is Bob Harris, and I have the honor of representing the Florida Association of Independent Nursing Schools. These are schools that are licensed by the Commission The majority of nursing schools in the state are private nursing schools. They produce the majority of the nurses that actually practice and provide health care in the state. And I wanted to make a couple comments. I'm very excited to actually meet Dr. Latorno. I know she's had to leave the room, but it's so exciting to see the Florida Center for Nursing and the work they do and the team she's put together. It's very important, and we need to follow their lead, very much so. We do have a nursing shortage. That's not a surprise to anyone. But let me tell you a couple of reasons why I think it's going to make it worse. And Dr. Cortez, I appreciate her comments because she's absolutely right. The incoming test in April by NCLEX is going to make it much more difficult to produce nurses. It's based on clinical judgment. The NCLEX is already an incredibly scary test. It's an adaptive test. Does everybody know what an adaptive test is? Okay, it's very difficult. 75 questions, could be up to 200 questions. And for a young nursing student, 30 kind of students we have, 32-year-old single mom with one computer at home, facing the NCLEX as it is difficult. Imagining what it will be after April is even more difficult. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But again, we're going to have, I think, after representing nursing schools for the past 35 years, we're going to have fewer nurses. I think because of this test, fewer nurses will want to take this test, and I hope we do everything we can to make it easier for nurses. And these schools will do a great job, I'm sure, but it's going to be more difficult. And it has been already said about faculty. The predictions are there. If we do not have the faculty, and if the pipeline funds and line funds and everything else you can do to bring more faculty, to get more instructors into the master's program and doctoral programs, if we don't find a way, it doesn't matter what we do about nurses, we're not going to have the instructors to provide training for those nurses, so we have to fix that. When the legislature passed legislation back in 2009, it really opened up the field, and we had 151% increase in new nursing programs, and as a result, we had more nurses. We need to continue that, we think. Let me suggest a few steps I think you should take. Some of them talked about a little bit already. We need to eliminate the first-time test taker as the mechanism for judging nursing schools. We need to eliminate that. I think Dr. Tan asked that question earlier. Congratulations. Asked that question earlier, but let me tell you why that's important. The first-time test taker is really an anachronism. It was created in the 1950s and 60s, where tests were only given a couple times a year, in writing, pen and paper, but it continues today. It is the question was asked, is this all states? It is all 50 states. It is a few professions in healthcare, but it's not in so many other optometrists, lawyers, doctors. It's not, you don't look at just first-time test takers. Also, as was mentioned, ASIN, the Accrediting Commission for Education and Nursing, the largest of the programmatic accreditors, on January 1, stopped looking at just first-time test takers. They are the first one to make the move to say, we're going to look at first, second, and third-time test takers. And unfortunately, the statutes for Board of Nursing says first-time test takers, so we think that needs to be changed. If you go in a hospital, the nurses and scrubs do not have a white scrub if they pass it the first time, a yellow scrub if they pass it a second time, or a red or black scrub if they pass it a third time. They pass the exam, and they're in the hospital working. And I think we need to follow the trend of ASIN and get rid of that part of the statute and look at all testers. Let me give you an example. I represent a school down in South Florida. English is a second language, and 97% of their students. You look at their first-time test taker in 2021, 63%, not very good. If you look at their second and third time, it's almost 80%. In 2022, they were up to 77% on first-time test takers, 84.62% if you count second and third. And those second and third-time testers are in, they're graduated, they pass the test, they're working in the field. We need to follow that lead of ASIN, in my view. Number two, it was already asked. The NCSBN needs to have this test in Spanish. The question was asked by Representative Hinson about why did the scores on the Southeast look lower? There's a couple of reasons for that, but one of the reasons is that's where your English as a second language students are. They're there in that area, and they just do not do as well on the test. We met yesterday with representatives from Canada. There's only three countries in the entire world that use the NCLEX. Australia uses it when a nurse comes into Australia, not for their own nurses, but when someone comes into Australia, that's it. Canada, parts of Canada use it, and the United States, that's it. We spent a long time talking to them about the difficulties they're having just getting translations. Well, what they call the preferred way is called an adaptation, better than a translation. They're having real issues with their French students passing the NCLEX, In fact, there's a possibility that Canada may no longer use it and collects at some point in time in the future. So we believe that that test should be translated or adapted into Spanish, and we'll have a long ways to bring more English as second language students into the nursing profession here in Florida. They have a difficult time. Mr. Chairman, very quickly, let me add that, one, we believe that remediation should be required of all public and private nursing schools if a student fails the test in the first time. They need that extra assistance, and it should be required of all nursing programs. And many of them have it, but we think it should all be required. And again, the last thing is, request is, we think nursing students, wherever they are in the state of Florida, need some help. It's very difficult to get through this, the time-wise, and we think they need some more financial help. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, I want to answer some of the questions. Representative Tant, you had some very good questions about the...
Mr. House, I'm going to give you like one more minute because you've been going...
60 seconds.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
That's fine. You asked also about the first-time test taker passage. It would increase the supply of nurses if we went past the first-time test taker. And the other question that Chairman Schoaf asked was about the use of the pipeline and line funds. Those funds are used to bring additional faculty in. We think they need to continue to do that. There is a thing called the Certified Nursing Teacher Program, and that program will help teach. A lot of our schools, no faculty is out there unless they go through that Certified Nurse Teacher Program, and we think that should be required as well. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. The last comment is going to be Alan Mortham, Jr., from the Florida Association of Post-Secondary Schools. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Just real quick, we wanted to thank all of you for your attention today. It is a really, really important workforce issue, education issue, and healthcare issue. We look forward to working alongside the Florida Center for Nursing. They are obviously doing a fantastic job. Just wanted to point out quickly, because I don't think most people realize that our sector, the private post-secondary schools, actually teach, pass, and certify more nurses than the entire college system and state university system combined. So the vast majority, I think 60-some-odd percent majority of the new nurses that are passing the NCLEX every year are coming from our sector. Again, one of the questions was the pipe and line funding. It is vital. One of the things that we would suggest changing is to make our schools who are currently not eligible for the pipe and line funding to be eligible. We have the capacity to teach more nurses than we already do. And if we had access to some of that money, we believe that, again, we would be able to maybe more thoroughly help the state in producing some of the nurses that would reduce the 60-some-odd thousand shortfall. So not to take up any more of your time, thank you very much, and we look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, sir. That concludes public comment, and that also concludes our agenda today. Seeing no other business before the subcommittee, Representative Rudman moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.